Chapter 6. The doctor's advice remained counterpoised, in Milburn's mind, by the aforesaid mood of seriousness and sense of principle, approximating often to religious sentiment, which had been evolving itself in his breast for months, and even years. The feeling, however, had no immediate effect upon Mr. Milburn's actions. He soon got over his trifling illness, and was vexed with himself for having, in a moment of impulse, confided such a case of conscience to anybody. But the force which had prompted it, though latent, remained with him, and ultimately grew stronger. The upshot was that about 4 months after the date of his illness and disclosure, Milburn found himself on a mild spring morning at Paddington Station, in a train that was starting for the West. His many intermittent thoughts on his broken promise from time to time, in those hours when loneliness brought him face to face with his own personality, had at last resulted in this course. The decisive stimulus had been given when, a day or two earlier, on looking into a post office directory, he learned that the woman he had not met for 20 years was still living on at Exonbury under the name S. he had assumed when, a year or two after her disappearance from her native town and his, S. he had returned from abroad as a young widow with a child, and taken up her residence at the former city. Her condition was apparently but little changed, and her daughter seemed to be with her, their names standing in the directory as apostrophe Mrs. Leonora Frankland and Miss Frankland, teachers of music and dancing. Apostrophe apostrophe, Mr. Milburn reached Exonbury in the afternoon, and his first business, before even taking his luggage into the town, was to find the house occupied by the teachers. Standing in a central and open place, it was not difficult to discover a well-burnished brass door plate bearing their names prominently. He hesitated to enter without further knowledge, and ultimately took lodgings over a toy shop opposite, securing a sitting room which faced a similar drawing or sitting room at the Franklands, where the dancing lessons were given. Installed here, he was enabled to make indirectly, and without suspicion, inquiries and observations on the character of the ladies over the way, which he did with much deliberateness. He learned that the widow, Mrs. Frankland, with her one daughter, Frances, was of cheerful and excellent repute, energetic and painstaking with her pupils, of whom S. he had a good many, and in whose tuition her daughter assisted her. She was quite a recognized townswoman, and though the dancing branch of her profession was perhaps a trifle worldly, she was really a serious-minded lady who, being obliged to live by what she knew how to teach, balanced matters by lending a hand at charitable bazaars, assisting at sacred concerts, and giving musical recitations in aid of funds for bewildering happy savages, and other such enthusiasms of this enlightened country. Her daughter was one of the foremost of the bevy of young women who decorated the churches at Easter and Christmas, was organist in one of those edifices, and had subscribed to the testimonial of a silver broth basin that was presented to the Reverend Mr. Walker as a token of gratitude for his faithful and arduous intonations of 6 months as sub-precentor in the cathedral. Altogether, mother and daughter appeared to be a typical and innocent pair among the genteel citizens of Exonbury. As a natural and simple way of advertising their profession, they allowed the windows of the music room to be a little open, so that you had the pleasure of hearing all along the street at any hour between sunrise and sunset fragmentary gems of classical music as interpreted by the young people of 12 or 14 who took lessons there. But it was said that Mrs. Frankland made most of her income by letting out pianos on hire and by selling them as agent for the makers. The report pleased Milburn. It was highly creditable and far better than he had hoped. He was curious to get a view of the two women who led such blameless lives. He had not long to wait to gain a glimpse of Leonora. It was when she was standing on her own doorstep, opening her parasol, on the morning after his arrival. She was thin, though not gaunt, and a good, well-wearing, thoughtful face had taken the place of the one which had temporarily attracted him in the days of his nonage. She wore black, and it became her in her character of widow. The daughter next appeared. She was a smooth and rounded copy of her mother, with the same decision in her mien that Leonora had, and a bounding gait in which he traced a faint resemblance to his own at her age. For the first time he absolutely made up his mind to call on them. But his antecedent step was to send Leonora a note the next morning, stating his proposal to visit her, and suggesting the evening as the time, because she seemed to be so greatly occupied in her professional capacity during the day. He purposely worded his note in such a form as not to require an answer from her which would be possibly awkward to write. No answer came. Naturally, he should not have been surprised at this, and yet he felt a little checked, even though as he had only refrained from volunteering a reply that was not demanded. At 8, the hour fixed by himself, he crossed over and was passively admitted by the servant. Mrs. Frankland, as she called herself, received him in the large music and dancing room on the first floor front, and not in any private little parlor as he had expected. This cast a distressingly businesslike color over their first meeting after so many years of severance. The woman he had wronged stood before him, well-dressed, even to his metropolitan eyes, and her manner as she came up to him was dignified even to hardness. She certainly was not glad to see him. But what could he expect after a neglect of 20 years? "How do you do, Mr. Milburn?" she said cheerfully, as to any chance caller. "I am obliged to receive you here, because my daughter has a friend downstairs." "Your daughter and mine." She replied hastily, as if the addition had escaped her memory. "But perhaps the less said about that the better, in fairness to me. You will consider me a widow, please." "Certainly, Leonora." He could not get on, her manner was so cold and indifferent. The expected scene of sad reproach, subdued to delicacy by the run of years, was absent altogether. He was obliged to come to the point without preamble. "You are quite free, Leonora, as to marriage? There is nobody who has your promise, or quite free, Mr. Milburn," she said, somewhat surprised. "Then I will tell you why I have come. 20 years ago I promised to make you my wife, and I am here to fulfill that promise. Heaven forgive my tardiness." Her surprise was increased, but she was not agitated. She seemed to become gloomy, disapproving. "I could not entertain such an idea at this time of life," she said after a moment or two. "It would complicate matters too greatly. I have a very fair income, and require no help of any sort. I have no wish to marry." "What could have induced you to come on such an errand now? It seems quite extraordinary, if I may say so." "It must, I dare say it does," Milburn replied vaguely, "and I must tell you that impulse, in the sense of passion, has little to do with it. I wish to marry you, Leonora, I much desire to marry you. But it is an affair of conscience, a case of fulfillment. I promised you, and it was dishonorable of me to go away. I want to remove that sense of dishonor before I die. No doubt we might get to love each other as warmly as we did in old times?" She dubiously shook her head. "I appreciate your motives, Mr. Milburn, but you must consider my position, and you will see that, short of the personal wish to marry, which I don't feel, there is no reason why I should change my state, even though by so doing I should ease your conscience. My position in this town is a respected one. I have built it up by my own hard labors, and, in short, I don't wish to alter it. My daughter, too, is just on the verge of an engagement to be married to a young man who will make her an excellent husband. It will be in every way a desirable match for her. He is downstairs now. Apostrophe apostrophe, does she know anything about me? Apostrophe apostrophe, oh no, no, God forbid. Her father is dead, and buried to her. So that, you see, things are going on smoothly, and I don't want to disturb their progress. Apostrophe apostrophe, he nodded. Very well, apostrophe he said, and rose to go. At the door, however, he came back again. Still, Leonora, apostrophe he urged, I have come on purpose, and I don't see what disturbance would be caused. You would simply marry an old friend. Won't you reconsider? It is no more than right that we should be united, remembering the girl. Apostrophe apostrophe, she shook her head, and patted with her foot nervously. Well, I won't detain you, apostrophe he added. I shall not be leaving Exonbury yet. You will allow me to see you again? Apostrophe, yes, I don't mind, apostrophe she said reluctantly. The obstacles he had encountered, though they did not reanimate his dead passion for Leonora, did certainly make it appear indispensable to his peace of mind to overcome her coldness. He called frequently. The first meeting with the daughter was a trying ordeal, though he did not feel drawn towards her as he had expected to be. She did not excite his sympathies. Her mother confided to Francis the errand of her old friend, apostrophe which was viewed by the daughter with strong disfavor. His desire being thus uncongenial to both, for a long time Milburn made not the least impression upon Mrs. Frankland. His attentions pestered her, rather than pleased her. He was surprised at her firmness, and it was only when he hinted at moral reasons for their union that she was ever shaken. Strictly speaking, apostrophe he would say, we ought, as honest persons, to marry, and that's the truth of it, Leonora. Apostrophe apostrophe, I have looked at it in that light, apostrophe she said quickly. It struck me at the very first. But I don't see the force of the argument. I totally deny that after this interval of time I am bound to marry you for honor's sake. I would have married you, as you know well enough, at the proper time. But what is the use of remedies now? Apostrophe, they were standing at the window. A scantily whiskered young man, in clerical attire, called at the door below. Leonora flushed with interest. Who is he? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Milburn. My Francis's lover. I am so sorry she is not at home. Ah. They have told him where she is, and he has gone to find her. Dot dot I hope that suit will prosper, at any rate. Apostrophe apostrophe, why shouldn't it? Apostrophe apostrophe, well, he cannot marry yet, and Francis sees but little of him now he has left Exonbury. He was formerly doing duty here, but now he is curate of St. John's, Ivel, 50 miles up the line. There is a tacit agreement between them, but there have been friends of his who object, because of our vocation. However, he sees the absurdity of such an objection as that, and is not influenced by it. Apostrophe apostrophe, your marriage with me would help the match, instead of hindering it, as you have said. Apostrophe apostrophe, do you think it would? Apostrophe apostrophe, it certainly would. By taking you out of this business altogether. Apostrophe apostrophe, by chance he had found the way to move her somewhat, and he followed it up. This view was imparted to Mrs. Frankland's daughter, and it led her to soften her opposition. Milburn, who had given up his lodging in Exonbury, journeyed to and fro regularly, till at last he overcame her negations, and she expressed a reluctant assent. They were married at the nearest church, and the goodwill whatever that was of the music and dancing connection was sold to a successor only too ready to jump into the place, the Milburns having decided to live in London. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.